here we are. Do not get hung up in the past. You can't even prove if half these events actually happened, except for Fukushima. There's a lot of proof about over that. There's quite a bit of proof about Chernobyl too. We've got evidence of forest fires. We've got, you want evidence of chemtrails? Just look up. You want evidence of the Gulf oil disaster? All these things being foretold. The earthquakes in one place after another. There was a 5.5 or 5.6, was it, that went off in California the other day. It wasn't just that one. There's been over 100 earthquakes that have been rattling California nonstop. The one that we had in off the coast of Chile last night, 8.2, followed by an 8, followed by about 50 more, all above a magnitude of 4, all 4 plus. It is rocking down there. We don't get one earthquake anymore. We get swarms.
That's right. And, you know, I was telling you earlier about Mark Dice and how he was just picking like crazy. I don't know if he was just going after, you know, because he's right in a sense that every time something like this happens, the YouTube videos get firing up like crazy. But he went a little overboard, like it wasn't important, like it's no big deal, and it's fear-mongering to talk about it. And I'm thinking, well, then we shouldn't tell the truth about anything then, right? I mean, because we don't want to fear-monger. We don't want to scare people. I mean, my God, they might actually do something. This is World Watchers with Michael Vera, that is me, and Peter Kling. And we also have with us tonight Marshall Masters. I'm not sure he needs an introduction. I know we've got a full house here tonight, and I'm sure everybody is aware, but Marshall, if you wouldn't mind.
There's one perfect introduction for Marshall Masters. Here are some of the best minds on this stuff and in internet radio today coming together and sharing some really pertinent knowledge. And we all interact very well. And the Marshall, between the things that you have been keeping track of and what I keep track of, looking at the same object from literally two different perspectives, you are like totally hands-on, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm looking at the crystal ball of the prophecy saying, well, what Marshall's saying looks to be about right here with the timing of things, and here we are on the eve of the blood moons.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's this consistent convergence between prophecy and science, and I look at, you know, I'm data-driven. And particularly, we look for trends. That's the important thing we look for. Because it's really hard when you're dealing with things that are one-offs. Yeah, a one-off is a one-off. But when you see something that starts popping up again and again and again, well, then it's not a one-off. And I find that to be true with prophecy. So there's no question about it. It's we are in an age of prophecy. This is a time of prophecy. It's not, you know, where folks are, you know, hearing sermons about it on Sunday and going, yeah, I believe in all of this, and I believe in all of this, and I believe it's not going to happen in my lifetime. Hello, it is. You know,
this is the generation we've been told about.
That's right.
We're the generation our grandparents warned us about. Look out.
yeah, you know, it's tough stuff.
You know, Marshall, the one thing that I love about what you do is the fact that you are data-driven. You're not looking up and saying, oh, look at these pictures. Oh, don't you see two suns in this one? You're looking for the data. And when I look at the prophecies, I do the same thing. I'm like, okay, what matches up with this? And there's so many prophecies working on so many different levels. It's like watching binary go by almost. But all of a sudden, one stops. It's like, bing. And the one which goes bing on the Naboo or Planet X event is Revelation 6:12-17, where John says, hey, it starts off with a great earthquake, and then the sun goes black and the moon turns to blood, and we see or it looks like blood, and we see stars falling to the heavens like a great wind blowing unripe figs off of a tree, and the very mountain groups and the islands are removed. And he goes on to say, and the rich and the mighty and those ruling the earth and the support staff all head for the mountains and seek shelter in their deep underground military bunkers. So, you know, and we know they're there. I just read yesterday that a report of an entire underground wheat field.
Wow.
Yeah,
that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, look, they have unlimited resources because they've sucked it out of us, okay? We're paying for this.
That's right.
What we have is what I call a controlled abandonment, all right? The goal of this is really to ensure a population reduction because, you know, as we're doing the world today, there's not enough resources. Now, I would say in contrast to that, if everybody just simply became, you know, vegans, for example, and we all had a organic, whole food, plant-based diet all the way around the world, there's more than enough food to feed everybody. Nobody has to go hungry. Nobody has to be deficient. But we need a lot of that food for, fattening up the animals and feedlots and what have you. And the interesting thing is, after the guacamole hits the fan, that's pretty much what people are going to, when they start reestablishing, going underground, they're not going to have the resources to raise animals. Husbandry is going to go out the door. And so that is, you know, it's interesting, but that is where it's going to go. People are going to have more of a plant-based diet. And it's a shame we're not doing it now because we could save a lot of starving people. But,
absolutely. I was going to say the United States itself grows enough food every year to feed the world's population.
That's right. That's right.
So, and then you've got all of South America. I mean, why are we importing foods from South America? Oh, well, you know, it costs money and jet fuel.
I'll tell you something else. We waste more food in this country, enough food to probably feed every hungry person.
Yeah, a third of the food that we consume, we waste.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the shame of it is that in our country, we have a lot of kids that, you know, they never get fruits and vegetables. What they're going to get is processed foods. I mean, that for me is, I see the population being weakened in the diet itself. And that is really, that's part of this thing to ensure a maximum dieback. So when I look at, you know, you go into the grocery stores and the stores are dominated in the center with all of this processed food. And the processed food is what is creating, you know, so many of the horrendous diseases that we have. Again, it's weakening the population. You know, we're not eating what God made for us. We're eating, you know, better living through chemicals.
Yeah, right? Eating what Monsanto made.
That's right. Yeah. You know, so all of this, you know, is just how it's going, how they're doing it. And I think that people that are getting off the grid, going out, and they're, you know, setting themselves up out there in the country, all right, they're the ones that are really going to be the pioneers that are going to help those who do survive the initial events make it out of the danger zones. They're going to be absolutely important people. And then, you know, we're not going to, you know, in the future, medicine's going to look different too. I mean, what we're going to do is right now we have a death care system, all right? With basically, there's things that modern medicine does that we're going to miss, okay? We are going to miss, like, lidocaine when you go to the dentist, right? Pulling a tooth. You know, wait until the good old days if somebody just says, here, take a swig of whiskey and then pulls out, you know, a pair of ice grips. And there you go. That's dental
care. I hope all mine are gone by that time.
absolutely. You know, let's gum it down. And so, you know, emergency medicine, antibiotics, pain control. There's a lot of things that we're going to lose, but I think not entirely. The people that know these skills are going to want to keep doing it, and they're going to, in survival communities that are going to self-organize, they're going to be helped. But right now, guys, the whole thing for me is bust a move, okay? it's to be perfectly frank, you know, I have my supporters that are always writing me and they're going, man, these guys are sliming you all over the place saying you're a washed up has been because all your predictions for December 21, 2012 didn't pan out. You know, frankly, guys, I only made one prediction for December 21, 2012. That was an absolute. And I did that during a National Geographic interview, and they were so bored with it, they didn't air it. But they said, Mr. Masters, what are you going to do on December 21, 2012? I said, I'm going to get up and make my coffee like I do every morning, and I take my coffee seriously. Well, that's what I did that morning, okay? And
you know, Marshall, I'm here just before you went into what your prediction was, and I'm sure it came true. I'm going to my mind, what predictions did Marshall give for December 21st?
I only predicted. That's right.
It's like,
that's right.
It's like I'm scratching them. My brain. It's like, wait a minute. I've listened to you. I've interviewed you several times, and it's like, I don't ever remember that the only thing that you say which really hit a chord for me is that I did an interview in the beginning of July last year, 2013. Mm-hmm. On the 2013 to 2017 timeline. And then you gave your information about 3 weeks later. You did a video where you put, based on the movements of how you were tracking this Planet X, you put the possible arrival date at the spring of 2016. And I'm like, my goodness, this matches up with what I said 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
So, and for me, that was like, and this isn't somebody saying, oh, look at the pictures. You know, this is somebody who did some calculations. And when I hear that, it's like, okay, now I've got an indicator and I've got a target date. And now I've got to go back and look at the prophecies and say, what target dates do I find that resemble this and what things happened? And the only one that is there is the book of Exodus, where you have these 10 plagues. Interestingly enough, the last one is brought by an extraterrestrial life form and brings the sword of death. It's the angel of death that shows up. And here we are. The ninth plague is that the sun goes out. And so that brings us to the Revelation chapter 6, verses 12 through 17, where again the sun goes out. There are six prophecies in the scriptures which talk about the moon being turned to blood, or becoming as blood, and the sun being dark and not giving its light. And so here we're seeing it in kind of a symbolic way. And the odd thing is that it's a tetrad moon cycle where we have four total lunar eclipses, one after the other. And at the same time, there are four solar eclipses, two full, two partial. The second solar eclipse happens on Nisan 1st, which is the first day of the Jewish month of the Jewish year. And the two of the eclipses of the blood moons happen on Passover and on the festival of, I believe it's Booths, or I forget the exact name of it. It's the fall festival, the harvest festival. And so here, for this all to line up in this synchronicity, at this time, now I don't expect, all of a sudden anything beyond man-made issues here on Earth over the next 18 months. But after that, that's when you come on the scene, Marshall.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, the interesting thing is, I'm religiously speaking, I just belong to the Church of Marshall. We got one on the rolls, and we're not proselytizing. We don't do interfaith and things. We don't need donations. I just have my own view of the cosmos. I walk humbly with my God in my own way. But the interesting thing was, I put up a series with a gentleman that published his book, Jesus in the Third Temple, and it's called The Great Tribulation. And I was really amazed at the eschatology, because it is really there. I mean, this is an owner manual. It's like an owner's manual for surviving the cataclysm of what's really important, what you have to focus on. And unfortunately, a lot of it is just misrepresented. or misunderstood. And that is kind of the sad part, is that, you know, a lot of folks think they know what they're doing, but they really have, do they really read the Bible? And I mean, when you read it literally, it is an incredibly informative book. And it talks to these times, it talks to the signs. I think it's very, very powerful. But you have to, you know, you have to step out of doctrinal thinking mode. You have to be more of, you got to be willing to go, you know, walk your 40 days in the desert, if you will.
Absolutely.
Find it on your own. And what I call the spiritual Christians. And interestingly enough, I think that in the single largest demographic body that is going to be instrumental in what comes post-catastrophe, because right now my thing is simply this. If the meek do not inherit the earth, the psychopaths will. All right.
Yeah, that's exactly the truth. And here's the thing. The psychopath's plan is, okay, it's the carrot and the stick. The carrot, believe it or not, the stick is Fukushima, and the carrot is the 2045 transhuman to nanobot initiative. Gee, does that mean the end of all biological humans? Yes, it's exactly what that means.
Well, I mean, they've got their plans. I mean, what I see is, at this point, you know, folks are still debating, well, is this something I should be interested in? And could it possibly exist? And there are billions and billions of doubts. It's kind of like a reverse Sagan.
Yeah.
The elites, they've had that conversation a long decades ago, okay? They're already prepared. They're dug in like a tick. Right now, Peter, they're working on what happens next. Everybody's sitting here twiddling their thumbs trying to figure out what they're going to do, for the most part, 99.99% of the world, you know? And God bless them. There are a lot of folks that follow my work over the years, and, you know, and it just, I know it tortures them when they see these people smearing me in discussion threads and whatever. But to me, these folks that are smearing me are the useful idiots, because it's schoolyard politics. Everybody wants to see who's getting a whooping. And then they come to my site and they go, oh, this guy's really trying to do a square deal. Okay. And they build for me. You know, it's kind of a reverse tar baby thing.
And Marshall, and, as we
but
know.
I love them for the fact that they really are in awareness and they accept it.
I was going to say, as we know, there is a troll playbook, and they all play by that playbook. I mean, we all get it. Don't believe me. If you Google my name or whatever search engine you use, you'll find some stuff out there. I mean, we all get hit with by the trolls.
Yeah, we do. And the thing of it is a lot of the trolls, believe it or not, are just that's how they make their living.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they pay their child support. So,
Marshall, I just want to mention one thing. You're right about what you say about the Bible. You cannot look at it through religious eyes. You'll never get the truth. And even with the education that I had in the scriptures, which was not religious, I got an education in history and prophecy and how that applied. Essentially, it was based on more on exopolitics than anything else. Now, here's the interesting thing. Even after the extensive education that I had, and I didn't choose to be a minister, I chose to be a scientist. I wanted to be a chemist, and that's what I did. I followed my. I needed the scientific answers. I needed to know how it was possible.
Right.
And one day, sitting in the laboratory, I was waiting for a batch to cook, and while I was waiting, I was reading the Book of Job. And I got to this one part of Job, and I've told you about it before, where God's asking, Yahweh asks Job, have you seen my storehouses of snow and ice, which I've saved for the day of distress and war? It's in the 38th chapter. And I'm thinking, what would Job know about snow and ice? He lived in the desert. So, you know, I knew how to meditate, so I meditated. I went down to the theta level, slowed the brain down. I opened my eyes as if I was looking through Job's eyes. And I saw, all Job sees is, you know, mountaintops got snow on them. And so I started to elevate myself above the earth. And then I realized when I got far enough into space where I could see the poles, I thought, ah, that's where they are. The storehouses are on the poles. Well, how do you use them? You either make more ice or you melt it. What happens if you melt ice? You redistribute the water weight and you cause earthquakes around the world, don't you?
Now, that's
here's,
right.
Here's the thing. That set off.
And look at, by the way, Peter, look at what's happening with Greenland, all right? And with Iceland. I mean, we're talking about if they have melt-off, all right? Wow. I mean, there's just that is going to trigger a whole series of problems.
Oh,
and you know, you change the salinity of the oceans. Yeah, it was interesting. Remember the movie Day After Tomorrow? That was the whole thing. They changed the salinity of the oceans, and the ocean currents changed. We saw it with the BP oil spill. We reported it on our site that they had put so much Corexit in the water, which is why they use that was just had to be purely for psychopathic reasons.
Well, the Gulf Stream stalled, didn't it?
Yeah, it stalled it. Yeah. And it was just a sad thing to see. And, you know, another misconception that's really played out there a lot is they say, well, you know, if this was really happening, the scientists would tell us. The scientists do tell us, and usually a lot of them get killed for doing it. All right.
A couple of years ago, was it 28 astronomers died in 1 year?
Yeah. See,
I wonder what they saw that they wanted to talk about and weren't allowed to.
And they keep shutting them down. There's, you know, I mean, on Fukushima, oh my God, you know, this one is, it's awful. There is one prestigious scientist who wants to announce that Fukushima is going to hit us with as much radiation, all right, as 10,000 Chernobyls. And guess who is surprising him? Our lovely White House.
Well, of course.
Bada-bing. And so, but we saw this before. Remember during BP oil spill, you know, night after night, you know, woe to the world. CNN is sitting there going, we can't get on the beaches, because Obama had given BP goons federal authority to keep taxpayers off the beaches they were paying for.
And there was the end of freedom of speech and freedom of the press.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a classic example. And people are just, you know, they've been dumbed down. But guys, the thing you got to understand is that it's this suppression, all right, and this dumbing down is a participatory process. Otherwise, it wouldn't work, because the fact is people tend to cling to the bliss of their own ignorance like jealous lovers.
You know, an interesting thing, when you look at the Bible from a scholarly standpoint, that hellfire doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. The doctrine of it. But when you look at it, where the doctrine came from, it came from the medieval priests who started talking about this hell, and people started showing up. They wanted to be, it was their equivalent of our horror film. You know, the more gory, the more fiery, the more dead-like you could make a priest could make hell, the better his attendance was on Sunday. And this is a historic truth.
And gentlemen, we have a call. I don't mean to interrupt you, Peter, but we always promise the listeners we'll bring them right in. So here you are. This must be Mario. Welcome, Mario.
Hello, welcome, Michael.
How are you? Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you, Michael. I'm fine.
Great. You got a question for Marshall?
I sure do. Marshall, it is a pleasure speaking with you, sir.
Well, thank you. Likewise. What's on your mind?
Yes, I spoke with you last time you were on the LNN show. Could you go ahead and give us a time frame for what I like to call the event, or some celestial object to be coming very close to us. So, would you happen to have like a certain time frame for that?
I think the time frame is pretty much as I've said before. This is based on what we're seeing right now. We've been tracking the meteor's observations, and something very interesting has happened. We, for a whole year, were just watching this ramp up exponential growth. And all of a sudden, in the last couple of months, boom, it's collapsing. And that we find to be most curious, and I think a good likely thing, what we're going to be looking for is, are we between the bands? Think about it, all right? You have the planet Saturn, the rings of Saturn, all right? And they're banded. Well, this object that's coming in, the bands are much larger, much broader. And so it could very well be that we have passed through an outer band, and now we are in the gap between bands, which means if that stands, then the next time we start seeing an increase in bolides and meteor observations, it's going to get much worse. And that's what we're concerned about right now. And this is the we're doing the review on the data and in preparation for a video that I want to put up. And we're looking at that. And we have to present that honestly as just to say this is a possible explanation that we are between the bands. But I look at all of the other events that are going on, the increase in solar activity that we finally are seeing, the ring of fire. Right now, there's bloggers that are reporting that the bison are starting to walk out of Yellowstone. And, you know, that is something I've been looking for a long time. And I have my own podcast, Cut to the Chase. My very first podcast was on that back in 2004. And we were talking about, the possibility of if there were going to be an event at Yellowstone, then that would be one of the early harbinger signs. The animals are busting a move. They're getting out.
Always watch the animals.
Always watch the animals. You know, in the Sumatra superquake and tsunami, what was interesting was that who did the dying? The folks that did the dying were the ones that had the cars, the money, the education, and whatnot, and their domesticated animals. But the ignorant natives, as they're called, you know, the ones that tell wonderful stories about the woo-woo tree and the big turtle shakes, and when the turtle shakes, that's it. You know, it's your time to start running uphill as fast as you can, screaming, feet don't fail me now. They all survived. The ignorant natives, the intelligent Westerners were the ones that died. They were the ones going, oh, look, Carrie, get a basket. We pick up the fish. It's free lunch. All right? They're the ones who died. And their animals died. So, yes, we need to be tuned in with nature because there's a lot for us to see and observe and to save our own skins.
Yeah, and that's part of what we do here is keep the signs in front of us so we say, hey, here's another one. We're getting closer.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm going to step back to the scriptures here for a second. What my experience was when I read that event in Job, I thought, you know, if we really were the generation that would see, we are the last day generation, the generation that would see Armageddon, then we would be the target audience of the Bible. Think about this. Mm-hmm. All good information for everybody who went before us, but that means that we are the target audience. And I said, if we're the target audience, there's got to be scientific proof. And so I went right back to Genesis 1:1 and put on my scientific thinking cap and said, okay, let's look at the scientific proof and let's see what I know about what I've learned over the past 20 years about science and see how it applies to the scriptures. And here's the one piece of evidence that stands out above all others, Marshall. And this we couldn't have figured out until the 1960s, and that's because we didn't understand what DNA was before the 1950s.
Well, break DNA coming was discovered up here in about 30 seconds.
Yep, I'll cover this point. We'll go to break.
Okay.
Here's the situation. Genesis, the second chapter, the 21st through the 23rd verse, is an event which is genetic engineering. A tissue sample is removed from the man. It is then taken and turned into a woman, brought before the man, and the man knows it. He says, "This is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. This one came from man. I will call her woman. She's my clone." So I ask, who are the genetic engineers? And now the whole paradigm of the Bible changes.
Fantastic.
Yes.
All right, guys, hold on. Let's take a break. Mario, if you want to hang on the line, if you have another question, we'll let you get it in as soon as we come back from this break. This is World Watchers. I'm Michael Vera with Peter Kling. Our guest is Marshall Masters. We've got Mario, who's called in. He is on the line, and lines are open, 803-317-2264. You can also call in Skype to Skype, and the Skype ID is Late Night in the Midlands. We'll be right back. Marshall Masters, and we're going to have him with us for a good, at least another hour. We'll try to extend it as long as we can because this is very interesting. The website's www.latenightinthemidlands.com. Become a member, be informed, inform others, and the calling number is located on the latenightinthemidlands.com website. So feel free to go over and get it. It's right up in the top right corner. And, of course, it's on the chat and listen page as well. And I do have a question, Marshall. Do you have anything...
Mm-hmm.
To any input on these new planets that they have found beyond Pluto?
Yeah, well, you know, we're following this, and it seems to us it's kind of a preparatory. They're starting to bring out stories. They're starting to do things to connect people to the possibility of something happening. And... that way, when things do happen, they can say, we've been talking about it. We've been doing that. There's other times. The interesting thing about this is that back in the period of the 50s into early 90s, there was a very robust conversation about these things, about Planet X, incredibly robust. Yeah, in my last video, Planet X 101, Who, What, Why, Where, When, and How, I mean, I take people from the 1700s chronologically through the whole story so they can really see this is something that's just not some sort of recent internet phenomena. And in 1988, a NASA astronomer, who's, by the way, still on salary with NASA, not an astrobiologist or someone, I mean, this is a guy, he's an astronomer. And he gave an interview to a prestigious newspaper, and he said, yeah, we found Planet X, and we're 99% certain it's a single body. Well, when I published that in my video, I knew I hit a nerve because NASA had my book shut down on Amazon. And, you know, that's typical knee-jerk response. But, you know... I caught NASA red-handed, and it doesn't resonate with people. Another group came out. You know, we always hear people. I get emails all the time. I just went to Costco, and I got a telescope. Where do I go look? You know, and that's great. It's another Costco telescope guy. Another one of these amateur astronomers. Save your receipt and have it mounted, okay? That's your diploma. And... these guys went out. I published an article on my site about this, all right? People aren't interested. And these guys said, look, if you have a good pair of binoculars, say a 10 by 50, all right? Here, on this day, if you look up in the sky, you find this star and you find this other star and you draw an imaginary line between the two of them, you will see the brown dwarf right there. Okay, what happened was within 24 hours, their video was trashed and pulled down by the PTB, who immediately put up this horrendously stupid debunking. And that was it. And so I look at that and I go, you know, it doesn't matter if you tell people, okay, here it is, go look. They're not going to look. if you tell people your government told you this thing exists, they don't care. I mean, it's literally, you know, how do you convey that message to people who have eyes that do not see and ears that do not hear?
You got to put yet, it on Who's Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. Here's the next contestant, Peter Kling, Marshall Masters, and Michael Vera. They're coming out, and they're going to dance a little bit, too. And, you know, people would immediately shut off the channel and find some other stupid thing to watch.
That's right. Well, the only after Michael's done the rumba, you know, but...
Yeah, I got to do the rumba. We've got a question about Saturn in the chat. He was going to PM it to me, but I'll give it to you now because I'm kind of curious myself here. I just got a... Well, it's about Saturn and it being on a tilt. I can't exactly find the question here. Hold on. Let's see. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll ask it to you when I locate it here. I've lost it in the chat. So, yeah, just PM it to me, and I'll ask. Oh, yeah, okay. So, anyways, apparently Saturn is, showing Saturn with its rings in a vertical position, 180-degree tilt instead of a horizontal position. And he wants to know information on that, I guess. Is it normal?
Well, it depends on the perspective of how you are looking at the planet. I think one of the things that we're going to see as Planet X comes through is it's going to do this. We're not the only planet that is going to have a shift, a physical shift, not just a magnetic shift, but a physical shift. And I'm really interested in what I'm seeing in terms of the moon. Yeah, the interesting thing is when journalists are trying to go out there and ask the astronomers, why is it the moon seems to be topsy-turvy? I mean, then they do this Michael Jackson reverse moonwalk away from the question. Nobody wants to touch it. So these things are going on. But I think what's more important, all right, than the rings of Saturn or what's happening with the moon is what's happening here on our planet. I agree. To me is center ring. I'm in the big tent and that's it. I'm looking because what happens on the planet, we're not going to die in the billions because of what happens to Jupiter or Saturn or any other planet. We're going to die in the billions because of what happens to our planet. You know, the one that's under our tuchus right now. Okay. So, that, for me, is the big thing, and I don't want to get distracted from that. And we're tracking Earth changes. You know, the increase in seismicity is very noticeable right now. What we're really interested in is when we have a lot of this solar flaring, it's on the side of, you know, it's when the sun is facing away from us. And we find that very interesting. So there's all of these signs that there are increasing levels of perturbation, both for the sun and both for our own planet. And, you know, one thing I'm absolutely really relieved, and I think Chileans are, is that there were so few deaths with this recent quake, which, you know, USGS hasn't seen a major quake. They couldn't downgrade, you know?
Yeah.
They downgrade everything. You know, it's knee jerk. You can just, okay, we're waiting for them to downgrade it. Everybody else is reporting it. They always pull the numbers back to, okay, hit the snooze button, go back to sleep.
Well, and let's not forget that they moved that. I bring this up often because it's a very good point that they had moved the USGS, the Richter scale. They had moved that back. They had dropped it, I don't know, by 1.5 or 2 some years ago.
Yeah. And so but we always have seen this kind of fidgeting with the numbers. It goes on that way. It's just part of, look, the bottom line is the last to know are the first to die. Okay? And you don't have to go far to get that message. You know, you go look at the movies like 2012. All right? And people don't know they're dying until the day they die. The information is suppressed. 2012, you get past the eye candy. The movie is brilliant in terms of showing you the actual tactics and how the people who do this justify it to themselves. You know, for them, they're in it to save humanity, as in humanity is who they are and their ilk. Humanity is not everybody else out there.
And such as in the days of Noah, they will take no note and be swept away. Now, it's interesting. We've got the latest blockbuster out, Noah.
Yeah.
I wonder what Hollywood's trying to tell us.
I think it's, you know, coming around to a wakey-wakey. I'm interested to see how this resonates, because there is one thing that we have definitely noticed on the research level. And I would call it the 2012 dismissal. And people, you know, were sold 2012 would be a disaster date.
It was a sign.
And, you know, then what happens is, you know, now they're saying, well, it wasn't the end of the world, so therefore it'll never be the end of the world. And they use it dismissively. Now, to me,
Elenin came and went. 2012 came and went. ISON came. Well, ISON, who knows what happened to ISON?
ISON, well, ISON always was Comet Isn't to me. I mean, it was, when that came on, it was like, oh, God, they're going to Elenin again. Oh, man, this is it. We're going through this, running everybody down the rabbit hole thing. It's desensitizing people to the information,
yeah,
training them to dismiss it. Yeah. And so
one thing I do want to point out is that it is very effective, though. That we did get with Comet Elenin, you know, ELE, extinction level event. We got Fukushima on an Elenin alignment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And evidence tends to lead that Fukushima was a man-made event. So Elenin was more than likely used as a countdown timer.
A clock.
Well, I mean, Fukushima was a big reason why, you know, I've just moved. I relocated from Santa Cruz, and I'm a native-born son of California and lived in Santa Cruz for a long time. It's a very, very beautiful place to live. But I, you know, after I did our last video and Planet X 101, who, what, why, where, when, and how, and we were really tracking data very hard, and we're continuing to track it. We had further observations. We're going to be posting that. I got to a point where we are amassing the data for the next video. And as I'm looking at the data, I just said to myself, oh, hey, Marshall, you just, it's time to get the heck out of here, period. And I, you know, most particularly, I don't want to be in Santa Cruz when we start seeing radiation warning signs popping up on the beaches. Don't go swimming.
See, and that's what I like about you, Marshall. You don't just say it. You follow your own advice.
Yeah, you know, I eat my. There's an old expression from the Great Depression. You know, after that was back in 1929 and in the 30s, and among salesmen, it was, you got to eat your own dog food. And what that really meant was, at that time, canned dog food was a principal source of protein for a lot of people. And so when the traveling salesmen that represented these companies would go to local stores, what would happen is the shop owner would just reach into the case and at random grab a can of dog food and hand it to him and say, open it and eat it. And, you know, and if you can hold it down with a smile, I'll take a case or two. And so the salesman literally had to open up a can of dog food, and they had to eat enough of it to satisfy the shop owner without heaving their guts up. And at that point, they take some on and let it go. Well, what I did by this recent move, and now I'm in Reno, is it was time for me to eat my own dog food. I've been telling people for years, hey, you know, if you're living along a coastline, no bueno, you got to get out of there. You know, when I do what I call relocation, survival relocation analysis for people, when they place like a telephone order with me, and it takes about 15 to 20 minutes, and I look at where they're at, and I look at where there are areas they can relocate to, usually within about 500 miles. And the reason why I have a 500-mile range is every city, every location in the United States, you have a good location within 500 miles where you're at. Now, I have a scale of 0 to 10. 0 is you are on a ground zero situation. You will die violently. You will die badly. That is ground zero, okay? All along the coastlines, if you can open your window and see the ocean, you are in a ground zero situation, period. All right. Santa Cruz, that's it. Arrivederci. A tsunami could go in there like hydraulic sandpaper and grind it down to nothing more than a few broken bits of roadway and some pavement, and that's it. And that will happen to Santa Cruz, and it's going to happen to many other places. Coastal areas are going to really get hosed. And interestingly enough, what I find fascinating is that as the signs of these times increase, there is a direct and equal increase in denial.
So isn't that amazing?
Yeah, the more signs there are, the more the denial there is. In California, it's still surfs up, la-la land. It's never going to happen to us. But the funny thing is, I come to Reno, and I just love it here. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona in the 60s, and to me, Reno is my childhood, except the views are much better and I like the weather a lot more. And the people here are just fabulous. They're cordial, they're easygoing, and they're tough as nails. There's a much more survival mentality. There's more people here that know about me in this town I've just moved to than all of the people I've met in Santa Cruz. All right. That had any topic. I mean, in Santa Cruz, if I were to say, yeah, I write on the topic of Planet X, they'd go, ooh, you're one of those. Like, well, thank you. That makes me feel welcome. And but here, it blows my mind when I start talking to people. And I kind of, I hesitate sometimes. And then, yeah, I follow that. What about it? All of a sudden, they're asking me very technical questions. And so I know in this relocation, I found where I'm supposed to be. And for the folks that are right now paralyzed, and I feel for them. I got an email from this one fellow. His name is Hero. He's in Santa Cruz. And when I read the letter, it had me pacing the floor. And I actually wept for the man because he just said, I'm doomed. And I could see where this is coming from because there are people who are in awareness right now. They know they have got to bust a move. They've got to get the heck out of there. And what they're dealing with are, I call them hole knockers. You know, the ones that went up to Noah's wife and said, hey, Toots, your hubby's one short of a six-pack. His elevator's not going all the way up. He's not the brightest bulb on the tree. Ha, ha, ha. Build your ark in the harbor. Nothing's going to happen. You convert it into a casino and clean up. All right? All of these folks that were saying this kind of stuff. Well, when the waters came, what were they doing? They're knocking on the hull of the ark going, hey, I'm ready for that conversation now. Sorry, too late.
Marshall,
and so I call them the hole knockers.
I've been trying to get my brother to move out of Maryland. He's probably 5 air miles from the coast. His property is, the high point is 24 feet above sea level. I've been trying to get him out of there for 5 years. Nope, won't budge. 2 years ago, I gave him my boat. I said, look, the biggest thing you have to worry about right now at Canary Islands, they go, get in the boat. You'll go further than you will in the car.
Yeah, and if you get in the boat, head east, okay? don't follow the coastline. Just head straight for it. Get out there as far as you can. That's all you can do. But he's not going to do that. He's not going to do that. And so what's going to happen? The tsunami wave will come through, grind him to pieces like a hydraulic sandpaper, and drag his remains out, and he'll be crab bait.
Now, here's the interesting thing. The tsunami that went across all of Indonesia and over to Africa in 2004, there were actually some people who were out diving that morning
mm-hmm.
who felt the tsunami go by.
Yeah.
they felt the lift and they came back down. I used to dive quite a bit, and yeah, you can feel that movement in the water. You know, mm-hmm. good sized wave comes by, and they felt it. They didn't know what mm-hmm. it was. When they got back, the coastline was devastated.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, you know, head out to sea quick.
Couple of questions.
That's right. You know, it's really it reminds me of that old expression, "Run to the roar."
Yeah.
The run to the roar is a great expression. It talks about how lions hunt. And what they'll do is, you know, an old lioness cannot bring down a gazelle. They can get around them. So what they'll do is the young ones will go very stealthily, take their time. They go downwind of the gazelles, you know, crawl on their bellies in the grass and get into position downwind. And then the old lions will go upwind and start roaring for everything they are worth. And the gazelles are going, "Oh boy, we better run away from all that roaring and smell." And pow, they just, as they're running through the grass, the young lions just spring up and bring them down easy pleasy, nice and easy. And so, you know, that's the same thing here. If you're busting a move and it's time to get off to the coast, it really does take someone who's willing to be counterintuitive, if you will, to groupthink. And to run to the roar. And that's what you have to do. And so, unfortunately, though, Peter, I don't think your brother's going to do that. I think a lot of people, you know, it was interesting. When I was writing my book, Crossing the Cusp, we did about a year and a half of channeling research. And we did it scientifically. There was three of us. And one person was in charge. I would lead the channeling event with the sensitive. One was doing science, and one was doing cross-reference questions and feeding it to me through instant message. And we would, first off, what we would do with these sources, we would say, give us a weather event, a significant weather event, no less than 6 months into the future. And what surprised us is that they were always right on the money. Boom. Every time they gave us, they'd say, "You're going to have a late hurricane season. They're all going to pack up on you, or you're going to have a typhoon that heads towards Mexico, turns towards San Diego. It may not make it, but it'll be make the news." These things they were predicting, gave us these predictions 6 months to a year out. They always happened. Yeah, all right.
There's a point, and we can all do this. And you actually are going into a meditative state of theta. Mm-hmm. And in theta, you're not limited in the third dimension. You can see anywhere in time or space across all of the dimensions, which means you can pick out an event in the future and see it very clearly.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing here, guys, is we would, you know, we had different channels. Different sensitives. They were typically, the profile would be women that I would say would be postmenopausal, or, you know, they were settled. Usually they were in good marriages with supportive husbands. They didn't have spoiler spouses, very important. And they just had a gift, and they could just really connect. And this one gal, she was an open conduit. She could bring in incarnated, unincarnated, and extraterrestrial entities. And incarnated means someone, this is a spirit that had incarnated once in human form. Unincarnated was never been here, never bought the t-shirts. But then we had the ETs. That was interesting. And we were interviewing this one, we were channeling and doing this interview on this one ET. And you know, we had determined that they're, you know, on the other side of the galaxy. And I just had to ask the question. I'm going, well, you know, if you're way over in the other side of the galaxy, why are you interested? Why? What's here for you? And the answer that came back floored me. They said, because a lot of our ancestors have incarnated on your planet for this time. So, yeah, we got some skin in the game. And that was when I really realized that what's happening is what's going to happen to us is a cosmic event. This is something that is of great importance to many other races out there, what happens with us. And, you know, I guess we're the top headline right now for what's going on.
All eyes are on planet Earth. I've said this several times. Not just in the third dimension. All intelligent life forms, all interdimensionals, are looking at planet Earth right now, and they're waiting for the events to unroll, because what happens here sets the precedent to time indefinite, and people don't have a clue of what we are facing. It all comes back down to the Prime Directive, and we will be put back on that line for the Prime Directive in order to take our next step in development. But we got to get rid of all the garbage that's here now.
And Marshall, and also, I've got a couple questions from the chat for you, and I want to get them to you before they're gone forever here. Rhonda asks, with an 8.2 earthquake and the volcano that erupted in Peru that has not erupted in three decades, ask about that. And then she says, what do you think about the solar flares, or what do you think about that and solar flare, if solar flares or HARP might have been involved in doing that? Any of that?
I don't think we would have the capability of affecting the sun. Now, in terms of, you're talking about the earthquakes?
Yes,
yes. Seismicity. When I hear them say, well, this isn't connected to anything else, you know, I'm a retired systems analyst, and everything is connected to everything. So when I'm looking what happens at Chile, I'm also looking at the same time saying, you know, we had a couple of fives within the last week or so. We had one that was actually felt pretty well, a shaker, that we had a medium quake onshore in Los Angeles. And before that, we had another one of equal approximate magnitude offshore. And at the same time, then we have Yellowstone. The whole Ring of Fire is on fire.
A month ago, I had a 4.4 here in Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are quakes that are happening in places that are oddball. We've got old volcanoes. I mean, it is tiring to sit there and you read time and again, this volcano is erupting, hasn't erupted for 100 years or 200 years. And so these 100-year events and 200-year events are now the norm.
Could something people be embrace it that planet way? Earth?
Yeah, you know, could something? Yeah, I think it is. And I think that something's tugging on the sun. And so
one more question here. Says, I live 2.5 hours from San Francisco, California. Am I in danger?
2.5 which way?
I would
west. No, if you're 2.5 hours west, you're fine.
No, I wouldn't say that. No.
Okay, Marshall.
Ask that person in the chat room. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go on Google Maps right now. Give me your zip code. Let's take a look at this. Let's look at this in real time. Let's see if we can get somebody to bust a move, get them to save their life.
All right. Rhonda, if you want to private message that to me, I will.
Just give me a zip code. That's all. Just give me a zip code.
Okay. Well, I'm not receiving anything here yet, so I don't know if I'm going to get that or not. But
I'll tell you what I do see, and foresee.
Let's go to San Francisco.
All right. If you're in San Francisco, first off.
Here it is, 95301.
95301. Yep. Let's go look at this together, guys. All right. You're in Merced. Okay. For that person in the chat room, how long can you tread water? You're in a bad place, a very bad place. You know, you look up and down. You know, you're south. You're to the south and east of Modesto. This is all part of this huge valley out there. All right, where this is farming. Well, the soil is rich out there because it used to be an inland sea, and it'll go back to being an inland sea. So, for you sitting out there in 95301, you need to bust a move. And I am very, very serious with you about that. And but you have some advantage here, all right, in that you're going to be able to get up, you know, get some elevation, get up in the Sierra National Forest or the Stanislaw National Forest. You can, you know, there's roads you can get in there. But don't wait until the last minute. What people don't seem to grasp, and I understand this very clearly, particularly now that I've moved to Reno. I did business in Russia for many years, right after Perestroika set in. I started doing business there in late 92, all right? And I was over there many times, got the culture, and in Russia, in Soviet Russia, you had two passports. You had an internal passport and an international passport. The internal passport, you could not move from one city to another unless you had a prospekta. All right. If you were in the Ukraine, even though you were in the Soviet Union and you wanted to go to Moscow or St. Petersburg, you had to get a visa to go there to visit. You had to get permission to move there. You know, there were a lot of guys in Moscow that had no problem finding brides in the rest of Russia because that was the only way they could get into Moscow, was to marry into Moscow. What we're going to have here is that your internal visa, if you will become your driver's license. And so if you have a California driver's license and you want to cross the border into an adjoining state, you might find that's not going to happen. Now, think about it. The guacamole starts hitting the fan in California, and you've got millions of destitute Californians that want to pour over the borders into states like Arizona and Nevada. They're not going to let that happen. You kidding? You know, in terms of Reno, no question in my mind, they'd blow the bridges in Donner Pass before they're going to let that happen. And because the government right now, and this is, you look at it, they are already implementing this policy. It's called shelter in place. Shelter in place, in real speak, is you live where you live or you die where you die.
Another question.
Hello, Boston bombing, shelter in
place. Shelter in place, bada bing.
All right. Bear asks, what about people surrounding the Great Lakes, Canada also?
Oh, man. You know, here's where I have to say, if money were no object, all right, and I would say, where would I want to live? It would be north of, say, the states of North Dakota, Montana, and Idaho, up into southern Canada. So I would say, for example, you know, as far north as Edmonton, in into Saskatchewan. That, to me, if I had unlimited funds and I could go anywhere, I would go there. But in terms of the United States, what we're going to have is it's going to get shut down in terms of traveling and getting out. If you're stuck in an area, you're going to be stuck in that area. And they're not going to want you to, if you're in a highly affected area, they don't want you to immigrate out. They don't want to have refugees spilling into other areas that are stable and under control, because then what they have is two areas that are unstable, as opposed to one that is unstable and one that is stable. So that is what's going to happen. And if you're going to bust a move, folks, you have to do it now. If you're going to wait for things to really get bad, the borders are going to be closed before that. what you are going to start seeing is, first off, our government, we already have a Supreme Court that says the Constitution is, you know, outdated. It's an obsolete document. Hello. Yeah, I remember when I joined the Army, I took a pledge to defend, what, an obsolete document? Thank you. But when it starts to happen, you look at all of these police departments all across the country, they're getting these MRAPs and Humvees, and they're all painted black. And guess what? Next step is, when they paramilitarize these guys, they're all going to have blue helmets. So they're going to be black SUVs and MRAPs and whatnot, and blue helmets. And they're going to have the authority to shoot on sight.
Like United Nations blue?
Yeah.
How about that? Kind of like United
that's what,
Nations, New
folks,
World
that's
Order
what,
blue.
That is what we are going to see. And so if you're going to bust a move, you got to do it now. And that's counterintuitive, because you got to run to the roar.
And Marshall, another question here. Are you considering the pole shift? Please ask.
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind that when we have this flyby, we are going to have a pole shift event, because and it's a mini constellation. It's a brown dwarf with planets and moons. And when it comes around, it's going to arc over and above us and pass over us. All right? But when it does, it'll be on our side of the sun. In other flybys, it was on the other side of the sun. That's the reason why no two flybys are alike in terms of the impact on the planet. And this one, by the way, that prediction was made in 2008. And it was spot on. I talk about that in my videos. So that is what I'm telling people to prepare for. Now, in terms of a pole shift event, I think Edgar Cayce's pole shift prediction is what is going to come to pass, because it's consistent with my own visions of what I have been shown will be happening. And when you do this kind of work, you get sensitized. You do tap into source. And for me, what launched my campaign, or launched Yowza.com, was actually a shared death experience I had with my mother, who showed me what happens to Santa Cruz, which a tsunami wipes it out. But she also took me into the future, and she showed me what it would look like into the future. And there were two things that really stood out in my mind. You know, there was a limited amount of human habitation, but it was way up in the hills. The first thing was that the natural vegetation you see now, which along the coastline there is a lot of succulents, is replaced. It looks like the Hilo side of Hawaii, lush, verdant. So that would go with what, you know, Edgar Cayce was talking about, which is a few degrees of shift, 3 or 4 degrees. The folks that are saying, well, the planet's going to stop and start spinning the other way, or it's going to flip head over heels. I mean, something like that, it would just reduce us to single-cell animals once again. That would just be so catastrophic.
You know, Marshall, the one thing that I do want to add here, if this is a brown dwarf star which is passing by, it's one big iron magnet.
Yeah, it's going to get a lithosphere lock on the skin of our planet and just pull it around, okay? And that is when we're going to have that pole shift. And so when that happens, the oceans are going to come out of the basins. For those folks that are up, you know, earlier the question, I want to get back and answer that about the folks along the Great Lakes, okay? Hey, folks, just because it's an inland sea, essentially, doesn't mean it's not going to come out of its basin. It will. And if you are in Ontario and other areas around the Great Lakes, in Canada, and we document this in our video, there's what you call EDRs, emergency detour route signs, that are popping up all over the place in Canada around the Great Lakes. And all of them are pointing people to high ground, or whatever as high can be, away from large bodies of water, the Great Lakes. All right. And so this is being reported. We have pictures of that. And that's one of the reasons why, if I could sit this out. I would sit it out in a place like Canada, because that seems to, you know, they're out there doing something constructive. They're putting up these EDR signs. Our government is buying 1.6 billion rounds of small arms ammunition, and they're going to need it because people are going to be desperate. They're going to want to flock over the borders. They're going to want to find food and water. They're going to be like human waves of locust, and it's going to take an awful lot of, you know, a lot of ammunition to stop them. And they will do that. That will be the case.
The zombie apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be people running away who haven't had food in days, looking for food and things to eat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the walking dead, because they are as good as dead.
We have another call. And caller, please turn the volume down in the background. You're live on World Watchers. Welcome.
Hi, this is Rhonda.
Hi, Rhonda.
I live in the 95301 area code. He says I need to get the heck out of here.
Yeah, you do. And if I were you, yeah, I wouldn't be laughing about it. I'd be doing it. I'm serious, dear.
Would Yosemite be good to go to then?
Well, yeah, I mean, you want to get some elevation. I mean, you get up into the mountains, and I think the mountains are going to be as good as you're going to get. But remember something. As far as you get up into the mountains, all right, in California, you're still going to have the refugees piling in on top of you. So you might survive the initial event, but whatever supplies that you're going to have, you know, all of a sudden you've got a wave of human locusts coming at you. Now, you're going to have to think about that. That was the reason why I literally, when I was looking at it, and that's why I selected my big selection final decision thing for Reno, was that there was a border, and I know that they're going to close that border. Uh-huh. So if I were you, I'd be looking at moving inland. You know, you go to Nevada or northern Arizona. Get into those areas, relocate, get citizens.
Pretty much out of California.
I would say pretty much get out of California. Yeah. If you're in, you know, if you're up in, say, the northern part of the state, all right, mm-hmm. Now that's a different thing. You know, it's going to be more desolate up there, and I think that's going to be better. But if you've got a major metropolitan area, 95301. I mean, you look.
That's the San Joaquin Valley.
San Joaquin Valley, and you got San Jose, San Francisco to the west of you, all right?
I got Fresno an hour away from me.
That's right. And so you're going to have to consider not only where you're going to get some elevation and some safety, but you're also going to have to figure out what you're going to do with the refugee problem. So if you're going to go up into the mountains in California, go to some place where that's really going to be out of reach of the refugees.
Okay.
That'll be important.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I would say, you know, frankly, if you want to stay in California, I would, you want to go, and you want to, you know, be sure that you're established in the area that you're renting or you're owning up there. But go to, I'd say South Lake Tahoe on the California side.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know all that.
Get up there. You know, I could see where they're going to be looking for areas where all they can block off access. Yeah, you know, which means I would say if I were in California and I wanted to stay in California, I'd be looking at Truckee or South Lake Tahoe, something like that.
Yeah, because it's pretty odd that they started doing drills, military drills here in San Francisco of the tsunami scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's, you know, there was even a letter that just came from Obama White House saying, hey, people, you need to start being aware of tsunamis. And so, but I think a lot of that they put up there so that they can say they said something when the guacamole hits the fan. You know, it's kind of like CYA publishing. They know people aren't going to take it seriously. And that's the way it is. You know, but you want to get up and you want to establish wherever you're going to go at. It's absolutely vital you establish your residency there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because when the local police departments go paramilitary, they're going to be looking for that. You got a driver's license and it has a San Francisco address on it. You know.
Yeah.
It's different. If it has a Truckee address, okay, you're obviously in Truckee. You know, when I got to Nevada, I mean, one of the first things you have to do is surrender your license and go in. And they said, hey, even on your car, you can keep your California registration. I said, no. I want my California title converted to a Nevada title. I'd completely severed all connection to California because when the guacamole hits the fan, I am going to be a resident of Nevada, period. Which means when they're blocking, you know, they're blocking the roads at Donner Pass or, you know, to the west of Truckee and then elsewhere down there. Yeah, those are the folks that are going to need a visa to get into a place like Reno. And they're going to be far and few in between. And meanwhile, you're going to have these swarms of refugees just piling up into those areas. So if I were you, you know, get yourself situated. It's hard.
Yeah, because I really don't want to get out of California. You know, if there's any, like you said, like Tahoe would be good, you know, or somewhere north or north where I'm not so close to the ocean here, you know.
That's right. And the reason why I'm saying Tahoe is that Tahoe is going to be a major water reservoir. All right. Water is, I cannot overstate the importance of water. When I'm looking and I'm talking to people about where they want to relocate to, and I look at cities, for example, like Los Angeles, Las Vegas, New York, these are artificial constructs that are dependent upon imported water. And when things start busting up, that's it. They're not going to have enough water to keep everybody in those places going and alive, which means it's going to get real ugly, real ugly.
Yeah.
And while to me, Reno, I have on a scale of 0 to 10, to me, Reno is a 7.5 on that survivability scale. For me, anything that's 7 and above, go. All right? And I would give Truckee and I would give South Lake Tahoe, I put those as 7s. Those are going to be a good area for you to relocate into. Get yourself well situated. I'm not talking about a month-to-month lease. If you're going to go rent, you know, you get a one-year lease, all right? You get something that's going to show you're committed to staying in that area. And that is really, really important. And you have to look at, there are other factors in terms of relocating. And there are things that California has an advantage. I will tell you that states that do not have medical cannabis laws, I don't particularly care for in terms of survival relocation, because cannabis and colloidal silver, DMSO, these kinds of things, that is going to be, you're going to need that because we're going to have
awful bugs.
It's very healing stuff. And so Nevada right now is, they're going the route, and actually Nevada, they figured in 2016, Nevada will go the way of Colorado. All right.
Oh, yeah.
And they've already loosened it up here because they had to. The casino revenue is falling. So that factored into it. Do they have natural water? Another thing I look at for relocation states is gun laws. The tighter the gun laws, the less I like them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, states that have a good traditional Second Amendment view of the right to own firearms. All right?
Yeah, I understand that.
California doesn't have that. California doesn't have that. And I know, because, I mean, I've had to purchase weapons in California, and you really got to jump through the hoops.
Yeah.
It's really insane there. So that is a downside. On the other hand, California has very good medical cannabis laws, and they have other aspects that I like as well. That's the reason why, if you want to stay in California, just head up into there. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, if you, you know, otherwise, I'd say head up to the Modoc National Forest area. You know, what you want to do is find areas that you can relocate into that are really, you know, as far off the beaten path as possible, with some good elevation and good natural water resources. And that's absolutely imperative.
All right. We've got to take
a
break here.
A lot.
Thank you, Rhonda. I appreciate it. And I want to make a little announcement here. Well, I've got two things going here. One is the Stu report was not transferred over correctly. And while it could be, it would take me a few minutes to do it. I've decided, and Peter have decided, that what we're going to do, and besides, this show is a pretty good hit tonight, so what we've decided to do is move the Stu report to tomorrow night on Late Night in the Midlands. So we'll run it then, and we're going to keep Marshall for the rest of the night, and if that's okay with you, Marshall.
Pizza's on you?
All right.
Sure, why not?
I'm here.
I was looking at Northern California here, and I think I found the perfect spot if you're going to move someplace. Goodyear's Bar. No, see, I'm serious when I say that. Actually, the first place I liked was Downeyville, which is just east of it. But Goodyear's Bar was like, how could you forget that name? And the elevation at Goodyear's Bar is 2,800 feet, but Downeyville is 3,200. Almost 3,250, and it's got higher peaks around it. There are plenty of streams. It's all mountainous, and nobody lives there.
And nobody lives there. Yeah, you know, and it's good. There's other things that you want to look for. Here's some general things I also look for when I do an analysis. I want to see, in terms of the mountains, look at your prevailing winds. Are you on the windward side of the mountain range, or are you on the leeward side? It's better to be on the leeward side. Because the windward side, that's where, you know, it's particularly if you're going to have, like, we have these nuclear plants, and there are a lot, we're going to have more Fukushimas than we already have now. And those prevailing winds are going to bring that stuff, and it'll pile up on the windward side of these mountain ranges.
Yeah, I want
to. But on the leeward side, you know, it usually, it's not going to be able to move over the top of the mountains, and so it's going to be much more diminished. And then other than that, I prefer soft earth, rolling hills, and deep artesian water. Very important three things.
And when we come back from this break, I actually want to touch on that a little bit about the radiation dangers once hell does break loose, whether you believe it's from space or otherwise. No doubt something's coming. And so we'll talk about that. And any questions, if you have questions, you could either call in at 803-317-2264, or you can private message me in the Late Night in the Midlands chat room, and I will get your questions answered here as best I can. So with that, we're going to take our break. This is World Watchers on the LNM Radio Network, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Marshall Masters. Let's get back to things with Marshall. And as a matter of fact, if you do have a question you don't want to call in, or you can't call in, you could always pass it to me, private message in the late night in the midlands.com chat room. Peter and Marshall, we are back, and we do have another call coming in, so we might as well get right to that. 828 area code. You are on World Watchers. Welcome aboard.
Welcome, sir. How you doing, Mr. Michael?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great, sir. Listen, enjoying your program. Thank you very much for the information that you provided me. By listening to this program. But I also wanted to ask, I'm in western North Carolina, Smoky Mountains. It's like 28734 zip.
What's that zip code again? 287?
34.
Okay, let me go take a look.
And my other question was, sir, approximately when is this shift supposed to take place? Because that would be the most severe of everything we've seen.
It'll be the last of the events. the shift is going to be everything will be prelude to the shift. After the shift, that's it. Everything else is going to go. And I'm looking at your 28734, and you're gold. Just stay there, man. Just stay there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm a 285, let's see, whatever the heck it was. I used to live in Andrews. I grew up in Andrews.
In the background? Yeah, I do.
Yeah, who is this?
Mr. Kling, my name is Raphael, sir. I Facebooked you a couple of times, and you've been very kind to me. I've been very blessed and confirmed, you know, in my spirit when I looked at, into some of the information that you have provided, and Mr. Masters also. Pretty cool.
Yeah, you're in a good spot. I wish I could get back home.
Yeah, you're gold. You're gold. You're gold. I hope all of your friends understand that, because when the guacamole hits the fan, they better beat feet to your location.
Yeah, I really feel like the Lord brought me here. But, sir, my other question is, you mentioned about the shift. You actually didn't give me, you know, like a year, 2 years. What are we looking at? I mean, you guys... I'm more interested than I am.
All right. Well, what I am saying for folks is that from first grumble to last grumble, if you will, we're looking at no less than 3 years, no less than, and I would say no more than 10 years for the entire thing to happen. The reason why is that we have observations of this mini constellation. All right, there's a group that's done an excellent job. They have the infrared equipment. They're at a good altitude. They've tracked this constellation. We had one guy, Jorge Arena, who did image it, and the brown dwarf. We were able to publish that. But when we look at our original projections, we were having to reference things that we know already, you know, planets and moons, asteroids, comets. This mini constellation does not move like anything else in the sky. Right. And, you know, that's one thing we're told in prophecy, that particularly in the Colburn Bible, all right, which is if you want to go to a Bible where you actually, and it's a Bible because it's just an authoritative text, it's a secular text. Yes, but the ancient Egyptian accounts, they are like man on the street interviews, what they talk about. And the consistency between that and, you know, the Holy Bible are tremendous in what we're seeing. So it is going to happen.
What about life on that constellation coming in? I've heard some interesting things that I'm not really too sure if it's actually, you know, but perhaps it's one of them is Yahweh's planet, and I don't know. Does that make any sense?
When we were doing earlier in the show, I was talking about channeling research that we did. And one of the things that was a consistent thing that came up, we were told that there are two inhabited planets in this mini constellation.
Yeah.
So, yes, we're talking about the Anunnaki. All right. Sure. And we're going to see that. But I want you to know something. All right. We are going to learn things about ourselves as a species that are going to drop us on our head. All right? And it doesn't matter how we came to be, because everything comes from Creator, period. Doesn't matter who manipulates it. All they're doing is manipulating what Creator created in the first place. So it doesn't matter how we got here. We're good. All right? I tend to look at it like mining law. If we're working the claim, it's our claim. All right? And what's more important is not who they are. They are going to be whoever they are going to be. What is important is who are we? And that is, we're at this point. I think the Hopi prophecy rock really lays it out beautifully. And what the Hopi prophecy rock says, look, if we continue along this path, not going to work out so well. All right? what we're going, frankly, what will happen is if we continue on this path, we're just going to be a slave species until this planet is so exploited, no one's going to want anything from it anyway, and then we're going to be left with a dead world to live on, all right, as a species, and the freedom to enjoy it. But if we as a species evolve in our thinking and we abandon this acquisition and exploitation model of life, and then what happens is that not just a few of us, but it is something that is born into every one of us that survives, that the most important thing in life is not acquisition. The most important thing is harmony, harmony within ourselves and with everything that is around us. And when we get to that point, all right, then all of these maniacal, paranoid, schizophrenic schemes to dominate the species are going to melt away. And we will take that huge next step forward. We will take our rightful destiny. And that is the important thing. That is what I've really, you know, I looked at all of this stuff and I can remember back in 2006, 2007 when all of it was just pouring in on me and I was seeing it. And I was so depressed. I was so depressed. I was looking at the PTB, the elites, the amount of power that they possess and force and what they can do. And that was what put me on a spiritual path, because the transcendent power, the transcendent force is love. Amen. And I'm talking about being in it for the species. It's about us helping each other.
And you know, it's the same. As long as the message comes out the same, you know that you're on the right path, and that should be one of love. It's not one that, oh, you're going to burn in hell if you don't do what's good, or you're going to go to heaven for being good. It's one of, go back to the greatest commandment. Love Yahweh your God with your whole heart, soul, that's a very important component, and mind, and to love your neighbor as you do yourself, because we're all related. And what we are going to witness here is the extinction of the human race. We're going to see this. But at the same time as we see the extinction of the human race, we're going to see the birth of the human family, because it's going to be that love that family has for each other that brings us together, that I gets agree. Us through this.
Right on. Right on, Peter. Right on. Yo, I love it. You nailed it, Bubba. You nailed it with a jackhammer.
Anything else, caller? There's so many scriptures that have to do with this. And to get into this synchronicity, I you can go right down a list of all of them, which has to do, the key in this is actually found in Malachi, the fourth chapter, the first through the second, first and second verses. It says, the day is coming that is burning like the furnace, and the presumptuous ones and the wicked will become as chaff, and they will be burned away, and neither root nor bough will be left of them. In other words, they will all be gone. Now, who was gone? The wicked and the presumptuous. But now, who's left behind? It says, all of those who have respect for my name, the name of Yahweh, you shall become, let me get the wording of this exactly right. It says, the son of righteousness with healing in its wings, son with wings, will make you strong like young fattened calves, and you shall go forth pawing the ground. In other words, like when a bull, young bull starts to, you know, kind of feel his oats, he gets out there and he starts pouring up the ground and he says, I'm ready to go. You go to the county fair and the 4-H kids are there and they've raised these prize young bulls. They're perfect specimens, you know? And so that's what, now how does one event create two different outcomes? Be in the harmony of love. Now, interesting, love brings you down into out of the beta fight and flight syndrome into a state of love. It's where we pray. It's where we meditate. It's where we start to connect with the Creator. Yahweh is everything in all 10 dimensions and maybe more dimensions than that. He is the body that we live in. We're a fractal of Him. We also, what makes us so unique is that we also have creative powers. In a perfect paradigm, we would, with perfect DNA, we wouldn't die. And when you look at the reproductive system, women, a healthy woman is born with over 400,000 eggs in her ovaries. That's not evolution. And you look at the original scripture, right in Genesis, the first chapter, it says, God says, let us create man in our image. And so in God's image, he created them male and female. And what's he tell them? Be fruitful, become many, and fill the earth. Hey, you got perfect DNA. You're not going to die. You got all the time. You got about 7,000 years. I'm going to take a rest. You all have fun. I'll be back to see you later.
Well, we've now, definitely been filling the earth.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting thing. When, if I believe under the original paradigm, a woman would have come into her cycle once a year. Look at horses. Look at deer. Look at a lot of the wildlife in the earth. It all runs on basically, well, not all, but most of it runs on an annual cycle, except for rodents. Rodents, you know, humans breed like rats. But there's an interesting scripture which comes out after this. But let's say the paradigm was originally, hey, time's not an issue. You have perfect DNA. You're the child of God, and your assignment is to make more little children of God. So every year, for the next however long it takes, you're gonna have the opportunity of having a baby. So now that changes that 400,000 eggs. If they were used at once a month, a woman would still have to live 35,000 years. But if the woman was using them at once a year, there's a 500,000 years worth of eggs there.
All right, and caller, if you got anything else, by all means, go right ahead.
No, my brother, I'm good. The only other thing I was thinking about was the you could help me refresh it in my mind. How's the Anunnaki connection as far as, if Yahweh is everything, did they, like, deviate from the plan? I mean, I've heard about two brothers, Enki and Enlil.
Yeah.
I was trying to put it all together.
When there's not much mentioned in the scriptures, the only thing that's mentioned in the scriptures is about Nimrod and that he was a mighty hunter in opposition to Yahweh. Now, when you go back and you look at the Sumerian texts, which are actually older than the biblical text, you run into the Anunnaki. And what's the one great thing that the Anunnaki did for us? They gave Nimrod religion and government.
Right.
And so if you could remove religion and government from the world, most of our ills would be cured.
Yeah, and I think that is going to... I think that'll happen. I think that... Here's what I see is going to trigger this evolution in our species. First off, we are going to have a massive dieback. You know, the Georgia Guidestones say keep the population under 500,000,000. Doesn't say how we get there, okay? But it says keep it under 500,000,000, and that's manageable. So we go from 7 billion somewhat souls to 500,000,000. Then I think what is going to be the result of that dieback is that whoever survives is going to be touched in so many profound ways. Everyone is going to lose somebody. Everyone is going to feel this heavy loss. And whoever makes it to the backside, you know, I've always used that term, I'll catch on the backside for years, which means when the skies are blue again, all right? And whoever makes it to the backside, these are going to be human beings that are going to be profoundly different from us today, all right? They're going to look at us no differently than we would look at the barbarians, you know, during the Roman Empire. And they're going to see us that, you know, we came out of that, and what did we learn? You know, how did 7 billion people get reduced to 500,000,000? Because they were not in harmony with themselves and everything that is around them. And when you are not in harmony, it is called entropy. And in systems, any system that is in a state of entropy, that means it is, you know, it is colliding with the other systems around it, fails, and nature disposes of it. And so what I look at, when I look at everything that is going on, I see entropy. I see a world in disorder, chaos. They can't tell enough new lies to cover up the old lies. They can't create new monetary fiat schemes, Ponzi schemes, fast enough to keep what's failing from the old schemes. Lies upon lies, manipulations upon manipulations, and it is all folding up like a cheap tin. And what is going to happen afterwards? The people that are left standing, they're going to be so different from us today that I don't even think we can comprehend it. But I have a great deal of faith in the people that are going to survive this. I believe in them.
Marsh, let me ask you a question. Do you think that the people who survive this will be in touch with them, with their spiritual selves?
In ways which we could not imagine today.
Yeah,
you know, they're going to have, you know, there's a recent phenomena of shared death experiences. All right? And this is a new thing. That's actually what launched my career with Yowza.com, was a shared death experience I had with my mother the day she passed. It was very profound. And in that shared death experience, which was rather lengthy, she showed me the destruction of Santa Cruz. She also showed me what was interesting before I had talked about, you know, that it'd be a few degrees different because I looked like the Hilo on the east side of the Big Island of Hawaii. But the other thing I noticed was that the beaches were as white as Xerox paper, and there was absolutely no sign of animals or man. Nothing. Nothing was near those beaches. And I had this shared death experience with my mother in 1998. And I have always wondered, why was it she showed me these absolutely bright white beaches with no signs of habitation, animals, anything? No, I didn't see any birds in the sky. I didn't see any of that.
You just entered the Twilight Zone.
Well, now I understand why. The sands, the Pacific is dying. And we're going to have this Fukushima disaster is going to be on a scale we couldn't imagine, and there's going to be more like it.
Oh, yeah.
The oceans are going to be irradiated, and the reason why there is no sign of life and why the sands that my mother showed me were absolutely white was that they were bleached by the radiation, and nothing could live, nothing would go close to it. Life would know. It's, you got a nice scenic view. Don't step in the water. You'll die. And so we're going to leave that as a legacy to future generations. What is happening with Fukushima today breaks my heart. We have three coriums that have gone in. Remember the old movie with Jane Fonda, China Syndrome? We have got a China Syndrome triad. We have three coriums that have gone into the ground. And what happened was underneath the plant is a river, an underground river that goes and empties into the Pacific. And these coriums leach down into the aquifers, leach down into this groundwater river. And TEPCO went out and they tried to dam up the river. The dam failed. So what we have with Fukushima right now is a natural disaster that is out of control. They can't stop it anymore. They have so badly screwed the pooch, they can't stop it.
Well, it's not actually a natural disaster. I would call it more of an unnatural.
It's industrial. It's an industrial disaster. But it's the problem for me is this 1-2 punch of we had this earthquake and tsunami on 3 and 11, and then you have this, and so you have this 1-2. It's like getting hit in the gut by a 2-barrel shotgun. You catch both barrels. One barrel is the natural disaster, and the other is the man-made disaster that falls right in on top of it. And what we have to understand is that the eastern and western coasts of the United States are dotted with these same old outdated reactors. What they had were GE Mark I's. The GE Mark I was determined to be inherently defective by design. And what the powers that be did is instead of saying, okay, we need to shut them down and build new ones that are going to be safer, and the technology exists for that. Now, these crazy idiots want these tea kettles because tea kettles can be used to manufacture atomic weapons, fuel for atomic weapons. Well, we have these GE Mark I's. They did this crazy thing with, okay, we're going to put a new lid on the reactor so they're not going to blow. Well, reactor number 3, which was loaded with MOX fuel, I mean, it was insane in the first place. Reactors 1, reactors 2, they blew sideways. That was gas. That was subsonic. Reactor 3 was supersonic because the top of the reactor, the lid on the reactor, blew like a champagne cork straight up into the air. And it had MOX fuel in it, which is really, really nasty stuff. But it's as much sense as, you know, you already know you have a defective design. You go and put this super hot fuel in there. It's like you take your car that's running on low lead, all right? You know, you're running on unleaded fuel, what, 89 octane? You go to the airport and you say, hey, instead of that, you know, give me that 100 low lead that you're putting in airplanes. You put that into your car, it's going to do some serious damage to your engine. And they did that. They went ahead and put in fuel that was too hot for a defective design, and so that thing popped. And this is the kind of insanity that we see. And so we have Fukushima. We were actually very fortunate we didn't have more Fukushimas. There were 4 plants that were severely damaged during that tsunami. And when they say it was, they took out the power generators, and that's the reason why Fukushima popped, that is disinformation. The reason why Fukushima popped was that it took out all of the water pumps that were bringing in water to cool the reactors. 4 plants suffered losses of their pumps. Fukushima lost all of its pumps. That's the reason why it popped. Another plant lost all of its pumps save for 1. And if that one pump had been taken out, we would have had 2 Fukushima disasters, not 1. But what's really scary is in the United States, they're talking about the spent fuel rods in number 4, and they're trying to pull them out right now. And in General Electric is much better at not paying taxes than they are at building, you know, nuclear plants. That is proven. All right?
Yeah.
They put this spent fuel 100 feet over the ground in a country that has the highest seismicity, you know, of any country in the world, in an area that's going to be hit with these events all the time. And when they designed it, they said, okay, if we design it to survive a 1,000-year event, it's going to cost us a lot of money. But if we can go and gerrymander and manipulate the licensing, we only have to build it for a 100-year event. Well, 311 was a 1,000-year event. That plant was not built to withstand that event, period, by design, period. And Chernobyl, the reason why the core in Chernobyl is a blob is that the Russians got this real thing for rebar and concrete. If a little's good, a whole lot more is better. Not the Japanese, all right? They didn't pour the thick floors the Russians did. If they had, then it would have been a completely different thing. The cores would have not been able to melt through all that concrete and rebar like it happened, as it couldn't do in Chernobyl, at which point they just simply would have just start piling in the sand and packing over it and bury the site.
All right. And I want to thank the caller,
too. Burned right through.
I just want to thank the caller for his call. And, Marshall, you bring up a very, very crucial point of Fukushima. And again, we've got facilities just like that all over this country. And what happens?
And guess what?
Yeah.
Our facilities are spent fuel ponds. The Japanese didn't, you know, we have massive amounts of spent fuel in our spent fuel ponds. And so the reactors are in domes, but the spent fuel is just sitting out there. And hey, what happens? You know, run out of water, you're going to have the problem.
Yeah,
and they're
crazy.
Sitting there trying to pull these rods out. All they have to do is have one or two of these rods come into contact with each other. It's going to start a fire that is, they're not going to be able to stop it. All right? It's like the military uses phosphorus. Phosphorus, that's it. Once it starts burning, you can't stop it. This stuff will burn like a phosphorus fire. And, oh, my God. That is really going to muck things up. So, you know, what you really want to do is sit here and pray. Now, I'll tell you, one guy that if you want to get, I'll give you three sources that you listeners out there can follow on Fukushima. I follow these people and I really love them. All right. First off is Fair Winds Energy. All right. Arnie Gunderson, man, this guy is... he's a whistleblower. He was inside the industry. He tells you the science. You go with it. He and Maggie are just heroic people. It's a couple, and God bless them. You know, they bring energy, and they bring love, and they bring science to the conversation. Helen Caldicott, she's a physician. She's saying, we got to shut all this stuff down, right? I'm with her. I am so with her. All you got to do is just search her on YouTube. There's a lot of great stuff out there, and she's talking about it, and she gives you the medical side of it, and it is really scary. But interestingly enough, the guy that I identify with the most, it's a channel on YouTube, Nibiru Magic 2012. That's Nibiru Magic 2012. He's got, I've been following this guy since he had short hair. Now he's got this long hair down to his shoulders, and it's fun to watch him. He'll start off and he'll pour a shot glass and he says, okay, here's to the Fukushima 50. And he's got the sign on with the number of days behind him. And he'll flip his hair over one shoulder and he starts reading the headline, and it's really bad. Then he flips his hair over another shoulder and he reads another bad headline. And he does it because he's in it for the species, and he brings a sense of love and compassion to the topic that I don't see anywhere else. So for those of you that are listening in and you want to get up to speed on what's happening at Fukushima, because what we're seeing there is going to start replicating elsewhere. And this is going to be a real problem here in the United States, where these tea kettle reactors are going to start failing. Other things that I see that really disturbed me is before we got into energy independence with fracking, I would be telling people that are like living in New York, I'd say, hey, you know, get Western New York, get into Pennsylvania, get into these areas. And now I'm telling them just pass through those areas. Anywhere where there's these big fracking fields, forget about it. They're going to be death zones. And the reason why is these fracking wells are all going to fail. The casings are going to fail. And that means the groundwater is going to be horrifically polluted. These areas are going to be death zones, you know, unless you're going to be able to truck in water. But you're not going to want to use the water that's in the ground or coming up out of the ground. And the thing about it is with these the concrete casings on these fracking wells is that even when they're properly constructed, about 2 to 3% of them are going to fail on the first day. And then within 30 years of normal use, quote unquote, normal, the casings are going to fail. And all of a sudden you have seismicity in these areas. All of these fracking wells are going to fail, and they are going to pump untold amounts of pollution, horrible chemicals, into the water supplies. And so when you're doing your survival relocation analysis, folks, you better be aware of where these fracking fields are at. And you need to stay as far away from them as possible, because once the guacamole hits the fan, those are going to be dead and dying grounds, period. It's
just incredible what we've got to look forward to with any natural disaster. A big earthquake, I mean, yeah, another two, three, four Fukushimas. But I got a question from the chat here for you, mm-hmm. Marshall. And Adana says, please ask about the Northwest, New York State, like Rochester. She gives a zip code.
Okay.
14617.
14617.
Yes, sir.
Let's Google that. All right.
Let's see what we get. I know the area.
How long can you tread water? I mean, this is a ground zero. If you're there, especially during the shift, you're going to die, and you're going to die badly, period. That's it. I'm sorry. But there you are in the Rochester area with Lake Ontario just above you. That is not good. That is not good. I would say... And the problem too is that you're going to, the fracking fields are going to be a problem for you. You're going to need to map out where those locations are. I would really say that if you could northern New York State, as long as there's not fracking, and towards Vermont, you should be fine, depending on what your elevation is going to be. But otherwise, you're just, Rochester is not in a good place. I'm sorry.
Underwater.
If you're not underwater, if you survive that, you know, then you're going to wind up going down the fracking fields are going to really limit your choices of relocation areas. Now, on the other hand, if you could get into Canada the other way around, on the other side of the lake, and get north up, then, you know, up like around Algonquin Provincial Park, up into that area, that would be more where I would say to go if you could get up into the Canada area. But otherwise, if I were you, I would be looking at more than a 500-mile radius. Okay. I would be looking at that, you know.
Marshall, I've got a question, and this goes back to Planet X. There's been some reports about strange phenomena happening on Mars. I guess it got really cloudy there for a while, a lot of dust storms. Do you have any information on what might be going on on how Planet X is affecting Mars itself?
Well, we already know. I mean, it caused weather warming on Mars. That was one of the initial signs. You know, when we were actually when we started Yowza.com, I was trying to figure out what was causing the abnormal weather on Earth. Because when I was flying back and forth between Russia, Moscow, and San Francisco on Aeroflot, it was the polar route. And I watched the deterioration of the ice over the years. I mean, wasn't something where it was hills and valleys, one year good, one year not so good. It was a steady deterioration where it started off with absolutely beautiful, pristine, just drop-dead gorgeous. And when the last time I saw it, it looked like a busted windshield in a car. And so we were trying to determine what was really going on, and we determined it was solar-driven. And we said, okay, if it is a solar-driven thing, it's just not anthropomorphic. In other words, man-made. So Al Gore with his Inconvenient Truth is more like an inconvenient omission. And it is a solar-driven thing. And that was the conclusion we came to in 2000, because we said if it is, in fact, solar-driven, then we should see similar things happening to other planets in our solar system with atmospheres, which is exactly what we found. Now, we found with Mars that the atmosphere on Mars warmed to the point where if we had that same degree of warming in our atmosphere, we would all be dead now, unless we were underground. And there's been times, I remember there was a report during the heat waves that we had, that one particular day they said it was, or excuse me, it was during the winter when we were having all these winter storms, and the east was getting hammered. And one day they were saying we had all these record lows. If you'd been on Mars, you would actually had warmer weather. So all of the planets with atmospheres are being perturbed because this is solar driven. The sun is interacting with this incoming sister sun, this mini constellation that is a constellation within a solar system. And that trend is going to continue. We've seen, you know, I mean, this was all documented. I think one of the things that was interesting for us was Pluto. When Pluto comes in to its point of perihelion, that's its closest distance to the sun, it normally picks up some temperature increase before it whips back out to head back out. Well, in this last turnaround, it picked up heat, but it picked up 10 times more heat than it normally had before. So even Pluto was affected. This is all part and parcel of it.
What about the state of Florida? Is any place in Florida going to be safe? I've had a couple ask me about Florida.
Ooh, Southern Florida. What you want is a combination of either elevation and distance from a coastline, or you want just a whole lot of distance from a coastline. So I'd say if I were in Florida, I would want to be from Gainesville north.
I worry about them sinkholes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Florida is not going to do very well. Florida is not going to do very well. And when we look over another major area, now I think that in overall, the Gulf of Mexico, it's not going to be as extreme in what happens to the states that border the Gulf of Mexico as it will be to the states that are all along the Atlantic and the Pacific. But I think what's really interesting is Texas. From a survival relocation standpoint, first off, Texas, I lived there for 10 years. And the southeast section of Texas, it's going to go away. That used to be, if you're, for example, I'd say, in Texas, I would go 30 miles east of Austin, And because when I lived in Austin, we used to go 30 miles east of Austin to go find prehistoric shark's teeth. And there was plenty of them. Really, it was easy to find them. And then I'd say if you're drawing an arc from down around Nuevo Laredo and up along Austin, and then I would say you would want to be south of Tyler, about 30 to 50. So you would see, I'd say you'd border it from 30 miles east of Austin to around the Jacksonville area. That part of Texas is going to go away. But I also think Texas is very interesting. Texas has the right to secede from the Union. And I think Texas is going to do that. Texas is a gunny state. You know, I mean, that's it. Everybody's in Texas. A good neighbor is someone who helps you drag the body over the threshold. All right.
And Marshall J.H. asks if you, again, if you are considering the pole shift, because she says that it's not going to be like it is today, the layout. What do you think about that?
I think there's a lot of maps about, you know, what it's going to look like. I would definitely see, you know, along the Mississippi, that area is going to get, it's bone to be chewed. We're going to lose a lot of the West Coast. In terms of the eastern United States, when La Palma pops off, that's it. I'm talking about from Maine to the tip of Florida. If you're on the East Coast and as much as 40 miles inland, how long can you tread water? There's just going to be a wall of water that comes in. So a lot of the United States is really going to get chopped up pretty heavy. But there's in California, what I see happening is a good part of California is going to disappear. The western side of the state is going to disappear. However, we're going to see a lot of what you would call an archipelago, a lot of islands that are going to be left of that. And Santa Cruz actually will be part of that archipelago of islands. And because it's you know, it's on the uplift side, not on the other side. So it's got a pretty good location there. Not that people are going to do well. I mean, whoever's living there is going to get taken out by the tsunamis and it'll be just a real horrible death place. But yeah, the United States is really going to get trimmed down. But then also we're going to see whole new areas rising up out of the oceans as well. And once the freshwater rains rinse those areas clean, those are going to be the areas that folks are going to find the ability to make new life.
I see.
I would agree. You know, this isn't all doom and gloom. This is get prepared. That's what this time is now. This isn't, oh, you don't have any choice. You're stuck. You're screwed. You know, if you don't move, you're going to die. Well, you know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but based on this thing coming by and you look at the prophecies, it is going to take really following the greatest commandment and having that love and that connection. Interestingly enough, when you go down into that state of alpha and then into theta, your brain vibration is in harmony with the very earth itself.
That's right. And, you know, to me, consciousness, call it heaven, call it God, call it whatever you want to call it, but the universal consciousness has an imperative, and this imperative transcends all other issues. And that imperative, that transcendent imperative, is survival. And so for those of you out there who are having dreams, visions, and premonitions, all right. Yes, I know it torments you because you have these very vivid dreams. I mean, we're talking about IMAX clarity. You're there. You can smell the air. You can see colors. You see it's just sharp. And you remember the details That's the one thing with these prophetic dreams and visions. You do not forget the details. You know, normal dreams, it's like if you don't write them down, you forget them. Prophetic dreams, you remember it. And what's happening is the universe is reaching out, touching you on the shoulder with a simple message. Hope you make it. And if you're listening and you're going to use the information, you're going to make it. Or you're at least going to be able to make it far enough to help the ones that we really need to get through to the backside of this. And I'm talking about the meek, the good, kind people of the world. And there's a lot more of the meek than these psychopaths that run the media and the governments. All right? The meek are the good folks that are compassionate and caring.
Yeah, meek is not weak. It takes strength to be meek.
That's right. Look at the etymology. Listeners, tonight, after this show, go to your dictionaries online, or if you have dictionaries in the house, and look at the etymology of the word meek. And what you're going to learn tonight is one of the most vulgar perversions of something magnificent. Because the term meek was actually coined. It's attributed to Yeshua, but the term was coined in the 12th century. And what it meant was these are the good, kind people of the earth, salt of the earth people, enduring. All right? The folks that it reminds me of Micah 6:8 has been told thee all men what is good and what the Lord doth require of thee, to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. That to me is the meek. Okay, that is the meek. And these are the people that really matter. And so today, the word meek has been perverted 180 degrees around. And, you know, the official explanation is, well, we only, you know, track usage. Oh, kiss my grits.
Hey, Marshall, one more question here.
Sure.
Some people are asking, how long do they have to get their butts out of danger zones?
All right. I'm going to tell you what. On my site at yowza.com, at the top of the page is a short article about Marshall moved to Reno. And there is a link. And you follow the link and listen to the song, and I give you the month you should be in a different place by. So, because everybody says, where is it at? Well, they've been shown. Nobody goes to look. All right? Give me a date. You know, everybody puts it on the calendar. Okay, the world's going to end on this day. Day before, I'm going to have a big buying binge at Walmart. You know, I got it figured out. No. If you're going to survive this stuff, folks, you got to do your own homework. You got to do your own footwork. But I've given you a clue. If you're feeling the need to bust a move, go to my page, read it, and there is a link to a song. And in that song, I give you the month. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
All right, great. And Marshall, before we're done here tonight, if there's any information you'd like to get out, websites, whatever it might be, by all means, please go ahead and do that. And guys, we've got about another 3 minutes to go.
Okay. Folks, go to my site, youwsa.com. And for those of you who are new to the subject of Planet X, I produced a video, which was a very long video for me. It was 100 minutes. And it's titled Planet X 101, Who, What, Why, Where, When, and How. You sit through that. What I have done is I have created a single source of knowledge for you that would consolidate at least 6, if not 12 to 18 months of personal research that you would have to do on your own to amass this knowledge. You get it all in 100 minutes. And when you finish that, you are going to understand the topic of Planet X. And you're going to get it from a historical and science viewpoint. And I start in the 1700s, and I take you all the way through to the present. And also I would ask you, when there's a, in the section in the video, it gets to 1988. That is where we nailed NASA's tatas to the wall. NASA has admitted the existence of Planet X. It is undeniable. It is a huge cover-up. After we did that, they went into the Google News database and entirely redacted that entire day for that newspaper. And then after they redacted that entire day, they put the kibosh on my books to shut me up. Well, hello, here I am. Because, again, if the meek do not inherit the earth, the psychopaths will. And I am just not going to stand for that. I'm just not going to stand for it. I don't know if I'm going to make it through this catastrophe, but I know that the people are going to get through are going to be the meek. And if I can pay it forward in some way to help that effort, that for me is the meaning of life right now, because no matter what happens, there will come a day I will stand before my God and I will want it that, warts and all, Marshall tried to do the right thing. That's it. That's all I want to know. I want to, when I stand before my God, I want to know that, warts and all, I'm not a perfect man, but I fought the good fight and I'm trying to help and I'm thinking about the future, and it's not about me. It's not about what's in it for me. It's about our species. Because if we don't love ourselves as a species, we're lost. And worse yet, we're going to deny ourselves a future that will be amazing beyond what we can believe. And so to me, it's, let's get as many through. And the children of today, those are the real, real investment in the future. And by the way, for those of you, I don't care where you buy them tonight. I don't care where you buy them tonight. Get Heritage Seeds.
20 seconds.
Get Heritage Seeds. Again, please visit my site, YOWUSA.com.
All right. Thank you very much, Marshall.
Thank you, Marshall. Peter, I want to end with this one thing. Michael, if I could, Psalm 91, verse 7. 1,000 will fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but to you it will not come near. You will only see it with your eyes as you witness the punishment of the wicked, because you said, Yahweh is my refuge. You have made the Most High your dwelling. No disaster shall befall you, and no plague shall come near to your tent, for he will give his angels a command concerning you to guard you in all your ways. Love and blessings to all. Have a great night.
All right. Thank you, Marshall. Thank you, Peter. Everyone else, I'll be back here tomorrow night for Late Night New Midlands. Keep your eyes posted. Keep your ears posted, because you just never know. Good night.
Good night.